explanation as to Elsie and my running around. We've been gone for just about a month and plan to be gone another month. The previous month, we were in Arkansas quite a bit of that time. During that time, I had revival meetings at Somersville, Missouri, and we went to Spokane to be with Jeff during the time of his surgery, and went to Kansas for a wedding. We plan to leave this afternoon to get in on the tour of Israel that Dan has put together, and we plan to spend a little bit of time in Holland and back to Arkansas for a family reunion. I thought maybe I'd just say a little something about being in Spokane when Jeff had his surgery. I'm not going to go into a lot of it, but there's one thing particularly that really stood out to me. It's been about 13 and a half years ago now, in 05, when Jeff had his accident and the five children were killed. We, as the Schrock family, and of course the Berkeys did too, but I'm speaking now on the Schrocks, we spent the better part of a week there, and we were the Holiday Inn Express there, right close to the hospital, was somewhat our home during that time. We would come and go. They were very good to us. They allowed us to bring things into their little eating area in the evening and so on, and fed us a good breakfast in the morning. And so I kind of wanted to go back there. I knew a lot of time had passed, but just to see what the place is like again. So when we were there three nights and stayed there at that Holiday Inn Express. The first morning when we were there, the lady that was in charge of the breakfast came to me and said, did you stay here a number of years ago? I said, yes. And then something started clicking. She looked familiar. And here she was, the same lady that had served breakfast to us 13 years ago. And she talked to me. She said, I so remember how you had talked and how you had said that you had gone into the room of the man that had hit your son and how you had extended forgiveness to him and so on. Things like that many years ago that still, and she said that has just stayed with me, has impressed me, and she remembered all that. And I guess I'm just saying that not to bring attention to myself, but just to remind us that the things that we do have an effect. People remember, and even after all those many years, I did not expect to find anybody. But another thing that was interesting, the one nurse that helped to take care of Jeff also helped to take care of Carmen, their daughter, 18 years ago or whatever, when she had a cougar attack, and also Jeff when he was there 13 years ago, same nurse. So some of those things, connections are interesting. All right, well, I didn't necessarily intend to have story time here, but I thought maybe I'd just share some of those things. All right, I'd like to turn to 2 Samuel, if you want to turn to 2 Samuel 18. I've been reading in 1 and 2 Samuel the last couple weeks, and the story of Absalom has stood out to me again, and I just thought that I would share a few things in relation to what took place in the life of Absalom. And for a title or a text or whatever, there's the same question is asked twice in this chapter, and that is the young man Absalom safe? We find that in verse 29 and verse 32. And so we would like to look at that this morning. Is the young man Absalom safe? And now, I don't think too much of people who take a book, and so they want to see how the book turns out before they ever start the book, so they turn to the last chapter and read it, and then they begin with chapter 1 later. But we're going to do that this morning. I want to read the end of Absalom's life before talking about the beginning of it. So So I'm going to read, I think I'll read the entire chapter of 2 Samuel 18. And this gives the, prior to this was his rebellion, his taking over the kingdom, making himself king. And now there is a battle between his forces and the people of David, the death of Absalom, and how it affected David. So I'll just read this, and then we'll go back and look at some other things. And David numbered the people that were with him, and set captains of thousands and captains of hundreds over them. And David sent forth a third part of the people under the hand of Joab, and a third part under the hand of Abishai, the son of Zeruiah, Joab's brother, and a third part under the hand of Ittai the Gittite. And the king said unto the people, I will surely go forth with you myself also. But the people answered, Thou shalt not go forth, for if we flee away, they will not care for us, neither if half of us die will they care for us. But now thou art worth 10,000 of us, therefore now it is better that thou succor us out of the city. And the king said unto them, What seemeth you best, I will do. And the king stood by the gate side, and all the people came out by hundreds and by thousands. And the king commanded Joab and Abishai and Ittai, saying, Deal gently for my sake with the young man, even with Absalom. And all the people heard when the king gave all the captains charge concerning Absalom. So the people went out into the field against Israel, and the battle was in the wood of Ephraim, where the people of Israel were slain before the servants of David, and there was there a great slaughter that day of 20,000 men. For the battle was there, scattered over the face of all the country, and the wood devoured more people that day than the sword devoured. And Absalom met the servants of David, and Absalom rode upon a mule, and the mule went under the thick boughs of a great oak, and his head caught hold of the oak, and he was taken up between the heaven and the earth. And the mule that was under him went away, and a certain man saw it, and told Joab, and said, Behold, I saw Absalom hanged in an oak. And Joab said unto the man that told him, And behold, thou sawest him, and why didst thou not smite him there to the ground? And I would have given thee 10 shekels of silver and a girdle. And the man said unto Joab, Though I should receive 1,000 shekels of silver in mine hand, yet would I not put forth mine hand against the king's son, for in our hearing the king charged thee and Abishai and Ittai, saying, Beware that none touch the young man Absalom. Otherwise I should have wrought falsehood against mine own life, for there is no matter hid from the king, and thou thyself wouldest have set thyself against me. Then said Joab, I may not tarry thus with thee. And he took 3 darts in his hand, and thrust them through the heart of Absalom while he was yet alive in the midst of the oak. And 10 young men that wear Joab's armor compassed about and smote Absalom and slew him. And Joab blew the trumpet, and the people returned from pursuing after Israel, for Joab held back the people. And they took Absalom and cast him in a great pit in the wood and laid a very great heap of stones upon him. And all Israel fled every one to his tent. Now Absalom in his lifetime had taken and reared up for himself a pillar, which is in the king's dale, for he said, I have no son to keep my name in remembrance. And he called the pillar after his own name, and it is called unto this day Absalom's place. Then said Ahimaaz, the son of Zadok, Let me now run and bear the king tidings, how that the Lord hath avenged him of his enemies. And Joab said unto him, Thou shalt not bear tidings this day, but thou shalt bear tidings another day. But this day thou shalt bear no tidings, because the king's son is dead. Then said Joab to Cushai, Go tell the king what thou hast seen. And Cushai bowed himself unto Joab and ran. Then Ahimaaz, the son of Zadok, said Ahimaaz, the son of Zadok, yet again to Joab, But howsoever, let me, I pray thee, also run after Cushai. And Joab said, Wherefore wilt thou run, my son, seeing that thou hast no tidings ready? But howsoever, said he, let me run. And he said unto him, Run. Then Ahimaaz ran by the way of the plain and overran Cushai. And David sat between the 2 gates, and the watchman went up to the roof over the gate under the wall and lifted up his eyes and looked, and behold a man running alone. And the watchman cried and told the king. And the king said, if he be alone, there is tidings in his mouth. And he came apace and drew near. And the watchman saw another man running. And the watchman called unto the porter and said, behold, another man running alone. And the king said, he also bringeth tidings. And the watchman said, methinketh the running of the foremost is like the running of Ahimaaz, the son of Zadok. And the king said, he's a good man, and cometh with good tidings. And Ahimaaz called and said unto the king, all is well. And he fell down to the earth upon his face before the king, and said, blessed be the Lord thy God, which hath delivered up the men that lifted up their hand against my lord the king. And the king said, is the young man Absalom safe? And Ahimaaz answered, when Joab sent the king's servant, and me thy servant, I saw a great tumult, but I knew not what it was. And the king said unto him, turn aside and stand here. And he turned aside and stood still. And behold, Cushai came. And Cushai said, tidings, my lord the king, for the Lord hath avenged thee this day of all them that rose up against thee. And the king said unto Cushai, is the young man Absalom safe? And Cushai answered, the enemies of my lord the king, and all that rise against thee to do thee hurt, be as that young man is. And the king was much moved, and went up to the chamber over the gate, and wept. And as he went thus, he said, my son Absalom, my son Absalom, would God I had died for thee, O Absalom, my son, my son. And so we think of the question that David asked twice, is the young man Absalom safe? And you know, these are the words of a father. It's a cry of distress. A father whose son had risen up in rebellion against him. A father whose son, by treachery, had taken the kingdom from him and had begun to reign in his stead. A father who was more concerned for the spiritual welfare of his son than even the loss of his throne. And he cries out, is the young man safe? And you know, I think there, in a sense, this cry echoes down through the corridors of time. I think that there is a cry, not only just for young men, but for older men, for the ladies, the sisters. Are we safe? Or are we following some of the patterns that Absalom followed in his life? And as we look at the life of Absalom, we need to conclude that he had not been safe for some time. He had not been living a life that tended toward spiritual safety. This young man set a course in life that did not lead to a right relationship with his father or a right relationship with God, nor did it lead to a place of safety. Now, Absalom was a promising young man. He was a handsome young man, striking to look upon. So he was persuasive. He was able to convince others of his way. He took his own way. He did not seek the will of God in his life. He did not wait on the Lord to be used of him. But he took things into his own hand. And this ultimately destroyed his own life. And so we know that Absalom was not safe. He had not been safe for some time. And the course that he set in life led him to that position. And so there's several characteristics. I think I have five listed here. Characteristics in his life that led to the sad end that we read here in 2 Samuel 18. The end where he went out to battle against his father's forces, where he was hung in an oak tree. And there he dangled and was killed. The first that I have is the first characteristic was a spirit of revenge. And I think you know the story of his older half-brother, Ammon, who had sinned against Absalom's full sister, Tamar, and had violated her. And Tamar was devastated. Her life was ruined because of this act of Ammon against her. And Absalom told her, said, don't regard this. hold your peace. It was good advice. It says that King David was furious about this. But he did nothing to bring justice to Ammon in the sin that he had committed. And I suppose, as I think about this account, that probably in the case of Ammon and also in the case of Absalom, David probably felt helpless to do anything because of the sin that he had committed with Bathsheba and had murdered her husband Uriah. How could he take and do justice here to his sons? I suppose that Absalom was probably waiting to see what his father would do, but he did nothing. And so he determined in his heart that he was going to bring justice himself, that he was going to kill Ammon. And so he had a revengeful spirit. Now, certainly, Tamar had been wronged, and by extension, Absalom had been wronged. But he had determined to deal with Ammon. It says that there were 2 years that passed during this time, and nothing happened. Nothing was corrected. Nothing was taken care of. And Tamar lived in Absalom's house, I guess somewhat like a widow would. And so Absalom plans a time of sheep shearing. And this was off, 7 miles away, I think, maybe, or something like that. And sheep shearing was a festive occasion. We find that in a couple different accounts. And so Absalom invites his father. He says, why don't you come? And we're going to have sheep shearing. We'll have a time of celebration. But David says, no. He says, I don't want to be a burden to you. Maybe he didn't want all of his bodyguards and all that to have to be at Absalom's expense. So he declines. Well, then Absalom says, well, can my brother come? Ammon, let Ammon come. And my brother says, so finally David, he agrees. Now, you have to think about this, that Ammon was actually the oldest son, and so he would have been the crown prince and would have been in line to become the next king. And so Absalom plots his murder. And he tells his servants, he said, now you be prepared to kill him when I give the signal. And so they did that. And so in one act, Absalom avenged the rape of his sister and secured for himself the position of succession to the throne. So then he was the next in line. So Absalom had nursed this grudge for these 2 years. And he allowed the sin of his brother to start him on a downward course that ended in his destruction. Now, how do we make this practical to today? Do we all face wrongs? Are there wrongs that people have done to us? You know, as long as we're in this life, there's others that are going to do us wrong. I think we just need to be aware of that and be willing to accept that. And so what is going to be our response? Are we going to try to be full of revenge and try to take things into our own hands and correct it? You know, we can become bitter. We can have ill will. We can have an unforgiving attitude. We can seek for revenge. And I'm sure that those 2 years for Absalom were unhappy years for him because his heart was just seething against his brother. And in his mind, he rolled over different options. How can I do this? How can I take care of this and rectify what Ammon had done? And, you know, I think that often, and maybe this is more true in time of youth even than older. I'm not quite sure. But, we are disappointed by others. Others that we felt, that maybe that we looked up to, that we had thought would and had hoped would be a benefit to us and help us along. And yet we, by something that they've done or said, we're disappointed in them. And you know, if we're not careful, we can have bitterness and cynicism can set in and maybe feel like we've been betrayed, maybe feel like we've been wronged. And too often I'm afraid that we can be like Absalom and have a spirit of revenge. If I could just get even with that person because he or she did this to me. Let me straighten things out. You know, in Romans 12, it talks a little bit about vengeance. Romans 12, verse 19 says, "My dearly beloved, avenge not yourselves, but rather give place unto wrath. For it is written, vengeance is mine, I will repay, saith the Lord." So if Absalom could have just waited and allowed the Lord to work out the vengeance that needed to be met out to Ammon, but no. Verse 21 says, "Be not overcome of evil, but overcome evil with good." You know, Jesus taught us to go the second mile, to turn the other cheek. And so again, the question that David asked, is the young man Absalom safe? Well, no, David. Your son is not safe because he has given his heart over to the spirit of revenge. We know then that Absalom fled to Geshur. His grandfather, Talmai, was king there, and he stayed there for 3 years. Now, David's heart longed after his son, but seemingly he didn't know how to restore him, to bring him back. And it's interesting to think about. Nowhere in this account do we ever read that Absalom was repentant. So David didn't know how to restore him. How could he restore someone that still had that spirit of revenge in his heart? And so finally, through the conniving of Joab, and I'm not necessarily going to go into that story, Absalom was brought back to Jerusalem, but he was still not restored to his father. He was still there for 2 years and had not seen his father. So if I understand this story correctly, he hadn't seen his father for 5 years. David did not know how to restore someone that was a murderer when he wasn't even repentant. Okay, I'd like to go back to chapter 14 and we see what a handsome young man Absalom was. Chapter 14, verses 25 to 27. "But in all Israel there was none to be so much praised as Absalom for his beauty. From the sole of his foot, even to the crown of his head, there was no blemish in him. And when he pulled his head, for it was at every year's end that he pulled it, because the hair was heavy on him, therefore he pulled it, he weighed the hair of his head at 200 shekels after the king's weight. And unto Absalom were born 3 sons and 1 daughter, whose name was Tamar. She was a woman of fair countenance." I've wondered how much weight that was on the hair. You probably have too, maybe you haven't figured out. I was reading somewhere this morning where it seemed to be maybe somewhere around 3 pounds. But if you can figure out closer than that, maybe you can let me know. But I thought that was interesting. But at least there was no young man there in the kingdom that was more handsome than Absalom, a beautiful young man. All right, the second characteristic that I see in him was that he undermined trust in authority. And I'm going to read the first 6 verses, chapter 15. "And it came to pass after this that Absalom prepared him chariots and horses, and 50 men to run before him. And Absalom rose up early and stood beside the way of the gate. And it was so that when any man that had a controversy came to the king for judgment, then Absalom called unto him and said, of what city art thou? And he said, thy servant is of one of the tribes of Israel. And Absalom said unto him, see, thy matters are good and right, but there is no man deputed of the king to hear thee. Absalom said, moreover, oh, that I were made judge in the land, that every man which hath any suit or cause might come unto me, And I would do him justice. And it was so that when any man came nigh to him to do him obeisance, he put forth his hand and took him and kissed him. And on this manner did Absalom to all Israel that came to the king for judgment. So Absalom stole the hearts of the men of Israel. Now, I'm not sure what all was going on in David's kingdom. But I suppose that we know that David would have been a busy man. We know that David was involved in a lot of skirmishes with the other heathen nations around him. He was getting older. He probably didn't have the stamina that he once had. He may have even had some serious illness. Just recently reading in Psalms, he was lamenting about the illness that he had. And so maybe he didn't attend to the court as he could have and should have, and Absalom took advantage of that. He told people, he says, you know, the king's just not taking care of things. He hasn't appointed anyone to oversee your affairs. Now, if you have a problem, I mean, what you're telling me sounds right to me. And if I were given the authority, I would rule in your favor. And by doing this, day after day, he stole the hearts of Israel. And so by his very words and action, he drew attention to himself. And he made himself look good. You know, he surrounded himself with chariots. If I would understand right, I don't think we find that chariots were used by the kings prior to this. So he had chariots. And as I said, as the people came to see the king, Absalom would intercept them and make them feel that their cause was just. And he convinced the people that if he was ruler, their cause would be championed because he's such an understanding young man. You know, he had a grasp of their concerns. He understood their needs. He could be an effective leader if he was given the chance, much better than the king they had now. He made David look inept. You know, I've noticed over the years, it's pretty easy to point out the flaws, maybe, or inconsistencies of leadership to make leaders look ineffective, whether it be political, whether it be church, whether it be home, whatever it might be. And, you know, I think this could be a snare, particularly to younger people, to feel that you have the answers to life's problem. You know what? If people would just listen to me, I have so much greater understanding and perception of life's perplexities than what our present leadership does. I'm more knowledgeable on today's issues. That old man's just living in the past, doesn't know what's going on. You know, there doesn't have to be a lot said, but just a few well-placed questions can undermine people's confidence in those who are in authority over them. So we find that Absalom was undermining trust in authority. You know, the serpent started that back in the Garden of Eden, where he said, "Yea, hath God said." And so, you know, we will find sometimes those that seem to have such a concern, such an insight, and yet, if the truth were known, it comes from a rebellious heart. And so, with fair looks and fine speech, they can undermine trust in parents and in church leaders. In Romans 16, verses 17 and 18, it says, Now I beseech you, brethren, mark them which cause divisions and offenses contrary to the doctrine which ye have learned, and avoid them. For they that are such serve not our Lord Jesus Christ, but their own belly, and by good words and fair speeches deceive the hearts of the simple. And so the question comes back again, as we have thought about this characteristic of undermining trust and authority. Is the young man Absalom safe? No, David, your son is not safe. Because he does not respect God-given authority. And he's trying to undermine in the hearts of others what God has set up. The third characteristic I'd like to look at in the life of Absalom is treachery. So after he had been here at the gates of the city long enough, Absalom had gained enough of a following. He decided the time had now come to dethrone the king and to set up himself as ruler. And so he plotted. And let's continue to read in chapter 15, verses 7 through 12. And it came to pass after 40 years, and I think that 40 years, Josephus would say that was 4 years, and I think others would feel that this was a mistranslation. Came to pass after 40 years that Absalom said unto the king, I pray thee, let me go and pay my vow which I have vowed unto the Lord in Hebron. For thy servant vowed a vow while I abode at Geshur in Syria, saying, if the Lord shall bring me again indeed to Jerusalem, then I will serve the Lord. And the king said unto him, go in peace, for he arose. So he arose and went to Hebron. But Absalom sent spies throughout all the tribes of Israel, saying, as soon as ye hear the sound of the trumpet, then ye shall say, Absalom reigneth in Hebron. And with Absalom went 200 men out of Jerusalem that were called, and they went in their simplicity, and they knew not anything. And Absalom sent for Ahithiel, the Gileadite, David's counselor, from his city, even from Galath, while he offered sacrifices. And the conspiracy was strong, for the people increased continually with Absalom. Now, this is really something. We have here a young man full of treachery. And so he asks of his father permission to go to Hebron. And it was the front that he used was religious. I would like to go and offer to God for a vow that I made to him when I was with my grandfather in Geshur. And so I vowed that if I would be brought back and restored to you as a king, that I would go to Hebron and offer an offering. Well, that sounded pretty good. Well, I think David blessed him to go. But there was treachery behind the whole thing. There had not been repentance. Nowhere in here had there been repentance, but he was maneuvering things to his own benefit. His purpose was to throw off the present authority and to be an authority unto himself. You know, various times it seemed that Absalom sought for trust. At the time of the shearing of the sheep, and at the time now of going to Hebron, he asked for trust. But again and again he betrays that trust that was placed in him. Absalom had no right to the throne at this point, except by his own design. He had killed the rightful heir, and now he wants to take his father's place prematurely. Now he wants to do away with his father. And so I think that too often we see those who want to rise up against leadership, against established leadership, and take their own way. And at first, their cause may sound right. It may sound just. But underneath it, there's a desire for personal gain. They don't want to wait on the Lord to use them as He sees best. They look for a cause. Then they seek a following so they can have their own way. Using religious pretense to look good in the eyes of others. They feign to worship God in a respectable way. In 1 Peter 2, 13 and 14. 1 Peter 2, 13. Submit yourselves to every ordinance of man for the Lord's sake, whether it be to the king as supreme or unto governors, as unto them that are sent by him for the punishment of evildoers and for the praise of them that do well. For so is the will of God, that with well-doing ye may put to silence the ignorance of foolish men, as free and not using your liberty for a cloak of maliciousness, but as the servants of God. Honor all men, love the brotherhood, fear God, honor the king. Servants, be subject to your masters with all fear, not only to the good and gentle, but also to the froward. And so here we have a number of things. Submit yourselves to the ordinance of man. Submit yourselves for the Lord's sake, whether it's to the king or whether it's to governors or, all men, the brotherhood, the king, servants to the masters, so on. And so again, as we think of the treachery that Absalom used, we ask this question, is the young man Absalom safe? No, David. Your son is not safe because he has betrayed the trust that was placed in him. He's treacherous. He's used religion as a cloak for evil intentions. So he's not safe. So this leads into the fourth characteristic, that of outright rebellion. The ground had been laid for rebellion. You know, Samuel had told Saul that rebellion is as the sin of witchcraft. The NIV translation puts it this way, arrogance is like the evil of idolatry. Arrogance and rebellion would be the same thought. And so Absalom rose up against his father. He rose up against the Lord's anointed. He usurped his authority. And he gathered around him those that were sympathetic to his cause. And he disregarded the life of his father. He sought to destroy it. And now, once he had taken over, and there's some other things here that I can't go into all the details. But he felt the need to be combative. And to ensure that his position was secured. And so he gathered the men of Israel and went to battle with his father's forces, and we already read about that. He had gained a great support. He had a following. But one thing it seemed like he failed to reckon with was that God was not with him. God defeated this young rebel. And so I believe today we still maybe have those who would have the heart of Absalom, who rebel against what God has set up, who say, I'm not going to submit myself to God or to any of His, those He's appointed to be over me. I'm going to live my own life. No one's going to tell me what to do. I'm going to be my own king. And then try to surround themselves with those who are sympathetic to His cause. Jesus taught that the only way to greatness in His kingdom is through humility. And I don't think I'll read that. We could go to Matthew 20, where He says, among the Gentiles there are those who exercise great authority, but among you we need to have a servant's heart. And so again, the cry of the Father comes down through the centuries of time, is a young man Absalom safe? No, he's not safe. He's a rebel. And we could go to Deuteronomy and we find there that a rebellious son was to be killed, was to be stoned. And then the fifth characteristic I find is that of pride. And I already read this in 2 Samuel 18 verse 8. Let's see. Yeah. 2 Samuel 18 verse 18. Now Absalom in his lifetime had taken and reared up for himself a pillar which is in the king's dale, for he said, I have no son to keep my name in remembrance. And he called the pillar after his own name and is called unto this day Absalom's place. So Absalom was just a little bit afraid in his earlier life that maybe he might be forgotten, and so he built a monument. He thought it was necessary to keep his name alive because after all he was a very important person. He was a proud person. And so he wanted succeeding generations to know that there had once been an Absalom, a great man. He thought he was someone. He had a high opinion of himself. He was a conceited young man. Now he feigned humility, but inside he was rebellious and he was pride. He thought proud. He thought only of himself and how great he was. Romans 12:3 says not to think of himself more highly than he ought to think. And so how often do we let a good opinion of ourselves give direction to our lives? Pride. And so we find then that David, when he found out about the death of Absalom, his son, he cried out, "Oh, my son, Absalom, my son, Absalom, would God I died for thee? Oh, Absalom, my son, And I think that probably David realized the spiritual plight, the sad spiritual plight of his son, that his son's condition was not right with God. And I believe that in many ways David felt that he had failed his son, and that he had not made sure he was safe. And so I'd like first to ask this morning, the close of this message, is there any of the spirit of Absalom in my life or in your life? Are there seeds of a revengeful spirit? Do I have attitudes that are anti-authority? Do I plot to get my own way? Am I rebellious at heart? And does my life portray pride and arrogance? And you know, if we do, I believe that we can only expect to not to be caught in an oak tree and have our heart thrust through with darts, but destroyed. Destroyed both before God and our fellow man. And so I trust this morning that we can gain some lessons here from this young man who took his own way in life and became a reproach to his father, to the kingdom of Israel, but most of all to God. Let's have a closing number in song.